Hello, and welcome to Lula's A Pubcast, the official podcast of Lula's A Pub in scenic downtown Wilmington, North Carolina. This week we have a special episode as Bernie and Jimbo record their first Minho DVD commentary track for the 1980 futuristic rock musical The Apple, starring Catherine Mary Stewart and George Gilmore. The film is available on DVD as well as on Netflix Watch Instantly, so you can listen to the episode while watching the film. Let's join Bernie and Jimbo as they try to explain what the hell you need to do to make this work. Welcome to the inaugural Minho commentary track.
Yeah.
I'm Jimbo Suave.
I'm Bernie.
And today's film will be The Apple from 1980, a classic in many senses of the word musical, futuristic musical. And we're going to give you instructions momentarily about how to sync the film up with our commentary track. But first, do you want to explain a little bit about Minhos and why we're doing this and what we're doing?
Well, I mean, if anybody listens to this regularly, they know, like, the background of the Minhos. Minho, M-Y-N-H-O, is movies you've never heard of. I find weird movies, mostly on Netflix, and watch them and then review them every week. And very often, the ones that I actually review are really good movies. It all got started with just bizarre, fucked up movies I would see, and my friend Michelle asked me at one point where the hell I was finding these movies, and I said, Netflix, the same place you're finding your movies. I'm just finding really weird shit. And so,
right
after the initial success of the podcast,
we thought, we could babble for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
This could be better than some of the commentary tracks you find that you pay for.
Yeah.
And we can see what happens. So the sample film, the first test of a Minho commentary track is The Apple from 1980, which is available on DVD and on DVD through Netflix. But we wanted to make sure as many people could easily access this as possible. So we picked one that is currently streaming on Netflix as well.
It is.
So the idea is we're going to help you sync up our commentary with so you can start at a particular moment and restart the podcast so that you can stay in sync with us as we watch the film. And then, you know, I think we're going to try to go without any stops. And if we need to, we might even make note of when we're just leaving the room for a second. Yeah. And you guys can enjoy a musical number or whatever. But we'll try to keep it.
Well, we promise we won't leave the room together at the same time.
Right.
At any point.
Someone will be on point.
Someone will be babbling inanely about something. And it should also be noted that we're just, unlike our regular podcast, we're just having our first drinks right now. So you get to listen to us.
It's relatively
slow crawl to drunkenness.
Relatively early in the evening, so we'll see how we are by the end of the film. So, okay, now this is easier if you're watching the DVD, but if you're watching on Netflix, as you know, when you release the pause on Netflix, it takes a moment to buffer back up, and so there's no way to release the pause on Netflix precisely and keep it in sync. So this is what I suggest. We're going to tell you exactly when to pause the podcast, and then when you hit, and then, you know, play it on Netflix, and you'll see the, Leo the Lion, MGM Lion first. But since it's unclear where it starts each time you start it, let's not use that as the opening reference.
Right.
So what you'll do is release the pause on the podcast when the first image of the film comes up. Okay, so we're going to do a countdown, and we'll tell you when to pause us, and then basically you'll start off the Netflix playback, and you'll release the pause when you see the first image.
So that only barely made any sense. So let's try it one more time. When you're told by Jimbo to pause, that moment will correspond with the first image of the film. So when you hear Jimbo say pause, pause the podcast. Then start your movie, either on DVD or on Netflix. First, you'll see Leo the Lion, which will last about 10 seconds. Then you will see the first image of the film. When you see the first image of the film, release the pause on the podcast playback.
So if you are ready at home, we're going to start this, and it'll be approximately 4 seconds. And release on our end, go ahead. And then 3, 2, 1, pause. Okay, now, okay. And then this is, yeah.
Now so we're now, going. You don't want me to pause, right?
No. We're keeping going. And now okay. The apple has come up on the screen, and we're seeing the initial kids running into the concert. We've got some tripped up bikes. And at first I thought this was co-sponsored by Glad Bags, because half the costumes would be made out of
they're very affordable costumes.
Yes, very affordable. Some of the production design is very impressive. Well, some of the bikes. And there's one shot in particular I'm going to point out later, like how many cars go through the scene, considering, well, anyway. Oh, I forgot to tell them not to listen to this song first, but let's just keep going.
You can edit that
in. I can edit that in. So,
Jim should have edited in that he wanted you to listen to this song before we started. And if so, now is the time to start figuring out what the hell they're saying. Or yeah. You should have already.
It took us 2 or 3 guesses to figure out what was being said in this song. And seeing that it's the opening of the film, it's kind of confusing what the hell they're talking about. So,
yeah, very.
Yes. But now we start with a big splashy production number and a very receptive audience. Like I said, I had no idea what was going on for the first couple minutes.
Tell them what they're saying.
Yeah, now we're hitting the first chorus. Hey, hey, hey. And what were some of our guesses before I tell them?
I thought I had written down here on this piece of paper, Viz Your Gray. I don't even know what that means.
Yeah.
Viz Your Gray.
Online, I saw people were guessing like disco's okay or something like it's all sorts of possibilities. But the actual chorus is, hey, 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 Bims all the way.
Yeah.
Because as we'll find out momentarily, the key corporation and company and the name of the band itself is BIM, B-I-M.
The name of the band in the movie, not...
Yeah, the band that's singing
right
now.
They didn't really hire a band named BIM to be in their movie.
Right, they call this act that we see on stage BIM, but it's also the name of the agency, the corporation that's behind them.
Do we know what BIM stands for?
Yes, we will. I'll point it out. And again, it's not until like 10 minutes in that we realize what it even means.
Okay.
So we see lots of kids in the crowd. And again, I'm going to mention on... Oh, actually, here comes our main villain. Mr. Boogaloo.
Nice earring.
Yes. We're going to find out that his name is Mr. Boogaloo, so not to be confused
now,
with...
Now, when this movie was made in 1980...
Yeah.
If a man wore an earring on one ear, it meant they were gay, and the other ear meant it was okay. Do you remember which was which?
I think we're going to have to ask.
I think the left was okay, because when I first got my ear pierced, it was like 83, yeah. And it's my left ear.
Yes.
So maybe we're to assume that Mr. Boogaloo is gay, which, back in 1980...
It would have been coded that way.
Yeah, would make, a homosexual person would be bad.
Yeah.
Because he's bad.
Now, another thing to point out, they just pointed out the heartbeat machine, right? Mm-hmm. And so they're measuring the reaction of the crowd, and the highest heartbeat rate will win the competition. I think that's the premise. But if you go back and listen, they say, okay... The pulse rate is such and such, and then the heart rate, they give a different number. Is there a difference between a pulse and a heart rate?
No.
So, yeah, that's...
It's... But they didn't have medicine or doctors in 1980, so they wouldn't know that.
Right. We got to keep in mind when this was made. They had simple technology.
This was 31 years ago.
So we're going to see, again... We're going to come back to the heart rate machine, and there seems to be a flaw in the logic of the competition but we'll come to that in a second. But basically, the idea is whoever gets the highest heart rate response from the audience, that seems to be good. That's why they're recording it in that other room.
Right.
Now this, I don't even know if we're halfway through this number. One thing to point out
at
is
4 minutes and 38.
Yeah, yeah, and it's quite repetitive. And as repetitive as you think this is, we're going to get a reprise of this where it's just the chorus for about 5 minutes, where we stop even following the main characters. So we've got that to look forward to. So if you're not sick of the film or not sick of the song already, you're going to get much, much more of it later.
I think now would be a good time for you to go ahead and tell the story about the soundtrack. It's a short story.
Well, this is all based on. Oh, by the way, see the kids in orange?
Yeah.
Okay. At first, I was gonna nickname those the Guantanamo kids because they're in orange jumpsuits. Oh, 150. So we've just scored 150 heartbeats, and so they're really excited about that. Okay, that it's going to come back later. And a funny thing that is going to happen again and again in the film, there'll be like interesting little foreground background jokes.
Uh-huh.
So we're going to see something funny with that number in the background happen, and this happens again and again in the film, like different kind of foreground background staging.
I think I might have picked up on this when I watched it before. Yes.
Yeah, and then now we just heard what we would call in the trades a dialogue hook. He said, you know, it is 1994.
Yeah.
And then we understand on stage that thing in the background is saying 1994. So somehow this is supposed to be 1994, even though until he said 1994, I had no idea that that's what that logo said in the background.
Yeah, I actually wrote down, use your imagination, this is 1994.
Right. So, in other words, they imagined in 1980...
Down, is this Eurovision?
Yeah, they imagined in 1980 this was the future 14 years away, so...
And there she is, and she looks so different there.
Right, so now, here are our main protagonists, BB and Elfie, right? Mm-hmm. And we'll say more throughout the film about the actress...
Right.
Catherine... Mary Stewart. Or is it Mary Catherine Stewart? Or Stewart?
I don't know. I haven't talked to her in 23 years.
Yeah. But they're from, the characters are from Moose Jaw, which we think is in Canada.
Yeah.
And this is set in, filmed, as it turned out, in Berlin. So a lot of the kids in the crowd were just like kids from the local American high school in Berlin. There's some more orange jumpsuits.
The orange jumpsuits are never explained, right?
No, but we later, as I looked at it more carefully, the orange jumpsuits, because they have to reuse costumes, they do have a logic later that, and there's another quick scene where everyone is wearing the orange jumpsuits, and then, you know, you have to assume that.
Well, they're cheap. If you got a costume, this whole auditorium full of kids.
Right. So now here's the premise. Okay, now notice everyone's very calm by this calming universal love song, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yet, as we go back to the booth, their heart rate score is going to go up, and they're actually going to beat the other team by 1 point.
Right.
So how is it that a calming song, where they're now all calm and not jumping around, see?
Yeah.
The numbers are going up, and they're freaking out because the team, the band that they want to win... is Bim,
right?
And they're trying to fix it so Bim wins, but for some reason this calming song is causing their heart rates to go up.
So what you're saying is that the writer of this script somehow had a flaw.
Yeah,
their science.
This is only going to be the only scientific flaw we're going to see through the entire film.
I have to note also, I like the other thing as far as like costuming all these thousands of kids, that they utilize spray paint, which is another really efficient, cheap way to... They just put, like, little orange triangles in their hair.
Yeah, yeah.
Just spray paint that shit.
Just quick and down and dirty and just get it done, yes. So now here's the funny foreground background thing. He's like, you know, they'll never get over 150, and then it already has passed.
Yeah,
151. And the guy's voice says, oh, yes, we're above 151. Now, another funny thing is he says, bring out
152.
Yeah, bring out the red tape. And I was like, oh, I thought it was like, you know, the metaphorical red tape, like clear the red tape. But no, look, there's a red tape
yeah.
that is going to ruin the act. And
that's so, the subtlety of the writer's humor.
But you know, okay, so what does this red mysterious red tape do? It must be something really technological. No, it's put it in and it creates feedback. So why didn't they just say, put
I got to tell you, from working with a microphone and an amp every Sunday night, right. It's a lot easier to create feedback
than the red tape. Now here's so now the crowd is getting agitated and angry at our heroes.
So logically speaking, their heart
rate, but their heart rate is going to go down, and and their score is going to go down. So if the whole point is you don't want a high heart rate. Why is their heart rate going down if they're actually getting agitated?
But see, you're taking this so seriously. And I really, one thing I like about watching older movies is the fact that our base level of knowledge has increased so much.
True.
I mean, I see this just with trivia.
Right.
That there is so much that is just given knowledge now because of the internet and everything else.
Right.
And the fact that the world has become a smaller place. That these people, like, I bet nobody picked up on that back then. Like, if there was a doctor or a nurse in the audience, they were like, that's stupid. But I bet the average person in 1980...
It wasn't until the second movie that I even thought about it. So now we're getting...
how many times have you watched this, by the way?
Two and a half. This is my third and a half. Okay, on the foreground right, the foreign language journalist is the co-writer of the original Hebrew language stage musical that this is based on. Now, I want to point out some interesting things about the staging here as Mr. Boogaloo is being interviewed. One is, you'll see the guy on screen left bending over to put his microphone in the shot. Now, it makes no sense for him to be bending over. Like, who is he bending over for? Why doesn't he just stand up and put the microphone? Because all the cameras are in the background. Yet, why are the guys with the cameras in the background taking pictures of the back of his head? This is the foreground background stuff that I'm going to be pointing out throughout the entire film.
It's the Last Supper.
Yeah, exactly.
It's every meal in a restaurant on a sitcom where everyone sits on one side of the table.
Yes. Now, here coming into the foreground, Joe Pittman, the character on the left, he's going to come back a bunch of times, and he is played by George S. Clinton, who is not to be confused with P-Funk George Clinton.
Right.
This George Clinton is responsible for adapting all the songs into English language songs that we'll hear in this film. So, and they're both going to come back a couple times.
Did you mention yet that this is based on a...
Yes, so I started talking, this is based on a Hebrew language stage musical produced in 1977 and somehow gained the attention of the producers who I will talk about a little bit later. And, as we're seeing these great cityscapes, this is shot in Berlin.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing is they did some great location scouting in this film. There's some great locations and set, not so much the sets they built for it, but we'll come back to that as we see them.
Now, see, from my point of view, my observation at this point is that in the future, everyone has really big glasses. I don't mean that they wear. I mean that they drink out of.
Right.
And, I mean, look at the size of that big triangular.
Yeah, and the whole idea is like, Ashley has designed these BIM glasses, and why is it a BIM glass? It's because it's a triangle. Like, how practical is that to drink out of? I don't know, but
it all get up your nose and stuff.
Now, here's another staging thing that we're going to see again and again. This is what we call walk and talk, a very simple way of staging a scene, which is just have the people walk and continuously talk, and usually it ends with a stand and deliver where they'll plant their feet and then talk to each other for half a second, which they just did. Now we see
y'all are getting a film lesson from Jim. I didn't have to pay for his course.
Exactly. So I'll drop those little things every once in a while. Now, more references to BIM, but we still don't know what BIM stands for, but we will momentarily. We saw the logo on the pinball machine. And again, that sort of abstract graphic design, it does actually say, once you look at it closely, a B and an I and an M in the triangle. But it's, again, until you've seen it like three times, you don't notice it.
Well, the guard also outside the door just now during the walk and talk had a triangular shield.
Right. And that, again, that's going to come up again and again as the relationship between the company and the state seems to collapse. Like, it seems like BIM is like this 1984-ish Big Brother type corporation. So now we see our heroes walking in. You know, the fish out of water moose jaw duo walking into the big party. And we're going to see our, you know, first, well, I guess second big number momentarily. And it's interesting how many songs there are in this film. There's a lot of songs in comparison to, you know, actual plot and narrative information. So we're not that far off from our second big song. But did you want to say more about Catherine Mary Stewart, who's going to have her first big scene coming up here as she's taken upstairs to sing a duet? You know her from, well, we know her from Last Starfighter, Night of the Comet. And actually, I found out she has a role in Weekend at Bernie's as well.
You found that out?
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
how I know her.
Yeah. So,
she's a female star of Weekend at Bernie's.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they filmed that here, I think, down at Carolina Beach.
And okay, I forgot it was Weekend at Bernie's.
See, she even has a giant champagne glass.
Yeah.
Marie Antoinette's breasts were never that big. she starred in Weekend at Bernie's, and that was when I was a door guy at Front Street News, and she was dating this friend of mine, Polar Bear Watson, who was also a local musician, and he was always late. They would get together like on Friday night or whatever, and so she would hang out with me at the door for like 2 hours waiting for Polar Bear to show up, and she would like check IDs sometimes just because, you know, she didn't have anything to do.
Right.
But she was really cool. But we never talked about her being an actress. And I had a crush on her from Night of the Comet, which right. I loved when I was like in high school. I thought that right. movie was great.
Right.
And that was my, you know, my whole dream had always been when something like that happens is to go to the mall, much like Dawn of the Dead as well. But so I love that whole going to the mall thing. But right. I never, as many times as I hung out with her, we never once mentioned at all that she was an actress, really. And I never talked to her about Night of the Comet or any of that.
Wow.
We just talked about bullshit.
Right.
Actually, I did most of the talking, I'd say.
Yeah.
She was really curious about growing up in Texas.
Huh. Interesting.
No, it's really not, but she was interested.
then just before coming over, we discovered she has a Facebook fan page.
Yeah.
So we'll have a chance, hopefully, to reunite with her. Yeah. Electronically. And
I'm like, hey, you remember me? I was right. a stupid kid door guy. Right.
And at first I thought this space made no sense. How is it that they can look up and see them on the roof? But actually, when we pull out, we'll actually see that there is a way for them. The ceiling actually ends, and you can see the stairs in the far background. But here's what we're going
to
see.
Well, that's where they were going to put the Monkaterium.
Yeah.
So it just is open to the sky.
Yeah, and here's a common staging strategy for the rest of the film, which is... have this. There we go. See, now we can see that hole in that leads to this roof.
For the monkeys.
Let's have the singers not move that much, and then have most of the dancing happening in other spaces, and just cross cut between them. I have a feeling this is an easier way to stage a musical sequence, which is have the singers barely move.
Yeah.
And have everyone else move in a different space so you don't have to do retakes of the singing.
Plus, you don't want them to get winded, you know.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Well, how much dancing around could they really be doing, though? This is a very slow song.
Well, true, but it's going to come up again and again that there's a lot of movement elsewhere, and then the main people don't move that much. The other thing to point out is in terms of her acting style in this is her first film, we got to keep in mind. So. I'm going to make fun of her a little bit here and there because it seems like...
It's not like we keep in touch. I'm not going to be offended.
Yeah. The direction she seems to be getting is, or the way she seems to be acting is, where do I look and where do I stand?
Mm-hmm.
So throughout a lot of scenes, we're going to see her just looking at various things and trying to decide where to look or trying to decide where should I be standing. like even in this scene, as she's singing with him, it's like she's looking, you know, sort of at him, but not knowing exactly.
That's because he's a date rapist and she's trying to get away.
That could be.
And he's got a triangle on his head. You'd be moving away too.
Yeah, I don't blame her. I don't blame her. Most of the action is happening downstairs as people are going and, you know, swinging around a little bit, but not really moving that much.
And this is one of those scenes where you really see that they wanted to do Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Right. We were going to have a litany of possible influences of different films. One clearly being Rocky Horror Picture Show, especially this scene with the crazy costumes. But the, another one, even like sort of the bondage aspects of Rocky Horror comes into the costumes later, much later in the film. But yeah.
And then they start doing the hand jive and you're just like, what?
Well, definitely Grease is another one. Grease is another one that all the sort of 70s musicals, it seems like this rips off in some way or another. Rocky Horror, Grease. Okay, now we're almost 20 minutes into the film. Now, seeing that it's about 90 minutes, according to conventional screenplay structure, you should be hitting the first plot point by the 20-minute mark.
Uh-huh.
But there, Boogaloo's International Music. That is BIM. Okay. That's what Boogaloo International Music is. Here's some more walk and talk as they, again, lateral movement as they simply deliver lines as they keep walking and talking.
Do you think that's at all a play on IBM, International Business Machines?
It wouldn't surprise me, you know, like sort of a thinly veiled, you know, just simple rearranging of a famous multinational corporation.
Yeah.
So in other screenplays, you would be at your first plot point where the main character has to make a decision that's going to change the course of the, you know, the rest of their... Mm-hmm. So, like, in Star Wars, for example, by this point, Luke has, in the equivalent moment, the first plot point, Luke has decided, okay, I'm going to leave Tatooine, I'm going to change my life, and I'm going to go in a different direction. He's, you know, basically burning the Jawas at this point, right? And he's ready to go. Here...
Well, he didn't really have much of a choice.
Yeah, here, I think, by my count, we've got another...
That is a scary clown. A
scary clown. This is a very scary setup. I think we've got another, by my count, another 13 minutes before Alfie makes his decision not to sign with Bim. So we'll come back to that momentarily. Okay, now we've got this freaky landscape of funky characters. And here we're going to get another dialogue hook that I didn't even realize it was a dialogue hook until after the musical number is over, which is... this guy introduces himself as the leader of Ballet 2000, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then that goes right into the musical number. Little do we know that this group is his group, Ballet 2000, because nothing in this dance suggests ballet, nor does their costumes. Yet, as we'll see at the end of the scene, that this group is Ballet 2000. But you didn't realize that on first viewing, did you?
I don't know.
Yeah,
but people started doing a burlesque from Vegas.
And well, let me give props where props is due. This is wherever they found this location. This building is fantastic, and this is the closest I think to an actual half decent choreographed scene. This is sort of a fun musical.
Well, it actually has some choreography.
Right.
To it.
Right.
I like Mr. Boogaloo though.
Mr. Boogaloo. Oh, now do you want to know a little bit about Mr. Boogaloo? Do you recognize him from anywhere?
He's got a familiar. I think I saw this crappy musical with him in it one time.
Mr. Boogaloo, there's two things we might recognize him from. Actually, there's a longer list, but the two key ones that jumped out at me, he's the chess player in From Russia with Love.
Okay.
So the key bad guy in From Russia with Love, and he's a Russian general in Red Dawn. In any case, that kind of character, and I'm sure we've both seen him in other things and not realized it, but so now this is in a way one of the more successful in terms of choreography successful musical numbers. And now I sent you a link about the choreographer for this, who's sort of disowned the film and doesn't want people to know.
Really?
Yeah. Did you not follow that link?
Such a scandal.
Yeah, yeah. So the choreographer is Nigel Lithgow, who is... by the way, there's a segue. It anticipated the segue.
What?
The guy was riding a little cart that almost looked like a segue. So this film does predict some things.
Yeah.
Like American the invention.
Idol.
Yeah. And there's my segue. Another literal segue. He's the executive producer of... American Idol, the choreographer who's disowned this.
Right.
Yeah. And he's also one of the current judges on So You Think You Can Dance.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Who, the British guy?
It must be the British guy, Nigel.
Yeah, yeah, it's the British guy.
So
I don't watch So You Think You Can Dance, by the way. I watch The Soup every week.
So he
I
rarely
watched The Soup this week. Oh man, okay.
He rarely talks about this film, but he. I will in the show notes or our program notes for the podcast. I will provide a link to one of the few times he's talked about this film. He talked about it on MTV.com once.
So for all you fans, if you think you can dance,
right.
Now you'll have a little more insider information
right.
about your favorite Judge Nigel.
Right. So now as this wraps up, we realize that we're going to get an intercom call that Ballet 2000 can now see Mr. Boogaloo. But Mr. Boogaloo was just there. Like, how upset would you be that you've been waiting, even though Mr. Boogaloo was just dancing on the ground floor, you know, and
they couldn't see him. He was using his mystical powers to just sing to the camera. Yes. They didn't know he was there.
Now, luckily, we get an ellipsis, and we don't get the Ballet 2000 meeting with Mr. Boogaloo. We just cut to the chase, and we get BB and Alfie's meeting.
That guy so reminds me of Michael Rooker. His little thug that opens the door for him.
Oh, actually, you know, that's... I was going to try to look him up. The guy with the teeth? Like the fangs?
Yeah, the fangs. Yeah, the tusks.
Yeah. Now, this shot, as Alfie stands here... You know, I hate to point this out, but... Another theme in the film is really, really tight pants and big packages. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you see him, especially in widescreen here... as he takes a step back, like, those are really tight jeans and a huge package.
Are you impressed with his huge package, Jim?
Well, just on repeat viewing, it occurred to me that it happens.
That's why you kept watching this. That's why you're like, well, let me borrow the DVD before we...
That's right. That's right. So...
I need to check out Alfie's package in high def.
Yeah, yeah. And this is a great screen to watch this on, by the way. We're very fortunate to see it in its true widescreen glory right now.
Yeah.
Okay, so plot-wise, all we need to do is figure out, okay, obviously, Alfie does not want to sign, and she wants to sign. We're at the 26-minute mark.
Mm.
Thanks to a long delay and yet another musical number, that decision isn't really going to be made until, like, the 33-minute mark.
Because there's another musical
there's
number,
a musical
coming,
number
up.
Coming up. So, and even that's delayed by a weird sort of internal mental moment from with Alfie momentarily.
So basically, we're not at the 30-minute mark. We've had three musical numbers.
Right.
Each one lasting at least 5 minutes long.
Right.
So over half the movie at this point is musical numbers.
Right. And that's fine if, you know, I mean, most musical numbers sort of integrate narrative information with the the music. It's not everything comes to a complete halt, but very little has moved forward.
Mm.
I mean, nothing has really changed since
the opening party. You got me looking at his fucking package.
See, everyone's going to be looking at his package now throughout the rest of the scene. And it's going to be more prevalent once they go funky and... Adam and Eve on us in a few minutes. So, keeping in mind, just in case people aren't familiar with the Bible or thinly veiled religious allegories, the evil.
There's a reason it's called the apple.
Yeah, the evil agent here might be a little something like the devil.
Or at least the serpent.
Yeah. Actually, Shake seems to be more like a serpent. In the dream sequence, Shake's going to be like a serpent.
The gay dude?
Yeah, the black guy, yeah. Okay, now we have this imaginary earthquake going on. And fire and brimstone type stuff, and who knows what's going on. And... there's a good shot.
But it's definitely further cementing in Alfie's mind that this is not a good idea.
Right, right. He's giving the walls
are cracking asunder.
A clue from somewhere that maybe he should not be signing this. And, the agent is going to joke, oh, don't worry. You know, the first time I signed a big contract, the world seemed to be shaking. So, you know. But everyone's looking at Alfie now, and then we're going to, just in case... The biblical implications.
She says to him, what's the matter with you?
Yeah.
Oh.
an earthquake.
He's the only one. Oh,
yeah, yeah. See that? Okay, it, well, so that. Yeah, he was. He it was all in his head. Now everything else is back to normal.
Snake.
Yeah, Snake is coming up. So Shake is going to be a snake.
Shaking, snaking.
Yeah, and you know, Bebe just wants to go to the West Coast because that's you know where the tour is going to start. But Alfie. Finally, please make a decision. No, musical number. Okay, now we're going to make another transition, this time a little flashier, as the whole setting is going to change and we're going to go a little more abstract and more overtly biblical momentarily right here. And what's funny about the transition here, you know, obviously they're supposed to be like Adam and Eve, but moments into the musical number, they realize her outfit looks hideous, so they just change it to a red dress. She has this sort of ugly body stocking thing with vines on her covering her, but it looks horrible. So they say, you know, forget it. Let's just put her in her red dress. Okay, now we're going down to hell, and you'll see what I'm talking about.
Just for watching this movie.
See, now she's in this ugly bodysuit thing, and meanwhile he's all like greased up and you know mostly naked, and so now this looks horrible. So. One moment into the scene, they realize, let's just forget that and change her into a red dress.
Okay, I have one horn.
Yeah. I think that's has a biblical reference, but I'm not sure. I meant to look that up.
It's just their way of being subtle. Yeah. See, he's not Satan. He's only got one horn. It's...
Now, here we're back in package land because our fake Roger Daltrey guy, for the rest of the scene... I'd say this package is even more disturbing than the
that's
previous.
That's a flat-out cod piece.
I don't know what to say about that. And there's Shake now, who's the snake.
Yeah.
And these are, you know, sort of great widescreen compositions, great use of color here, but man, we're going to get another musical number momentarily here.
Of course we are.
And just in case the thin allegory is not apparent to people, the contract that she might sign is sort of like... the temptation in the Garden of Eden of an apple. And of course, it's always Eve's fault.
Right.
Yeah. So
I think this is where I made the observation. The one actual decent observation I made that somewhat surprised Jim when he was telling me that it was based on a Hebrew musical.
Oh, I was going to keep going.
I mentioned that I thought that the black chick was Lilith, who was the original woman.
Right, right.
And is much more prevalent in Hebrew mythology. Right. And is thought to be like the source of vampires and stuff like that. But she was also kind of a wife, mother, lover figure.
Right.
And she's almost on Alfie's side in this. I mean, she really is.
Yeah, and she plays a bigger role than you would think later on, and I'll talk about that, like how many musical numbers she gets in relation to Bebe, which is interesting. But, okay, two things that we missed. One thing is, what the hell is Napoleon doing down here? Like, there's a guy in a Napoleon outfit.
Well, where else is Napoleon going to be but hell?
Hell, yes. The other thing is, good piece of costume and makeup that I actually had to rewind to look at it again. You will see him every once in a while. The guy with two faces.
Yeah, I saw him a minute ago.
He's right behind Roger Daltrey right now. At first glance, that was really, really effective. And now you look at it a little longer, it's really fake. But that was freaky the first time he came on screen.
If you were stoned, you'd be buying into it.
Yeah. Now we got, more presentation of the package and the apple and repetitive lyrics. Scarlett, my girlfriend, at this juncture was walking in and out of the room. And, she said as I was watching, she probably would have liked this better if it had different music, you know.
Yeah.
If the music hadn't been so influenced by the Wiggles.
The Wiggles.
Very repetitive, you know.
If you do just watch this with our commentary track on it, we're really saving you a lot of heartache.
Yeah. I mean, you do want to at least sort of hear the music, but, and then we got Wolfmen and...
Chubby Wolfmen.
Oh, and then this is interesting, sort of the lynching that's going on in the background.
They weren't quite evil enough to be real denizens of hell.
Right, right. So...
they were like shoplifters and stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, so,
well, their necks didn't break, apparently. So
I don't really understand why half the apple is green and half of it's red, either.
I'm not.
I mean, I know that they're going with the whole green red theme,
right?
But
I guess could be hell and green associated with money and greed, and who knows?
Mm.
Yeah, or it could be that kind of apple. You know, just maybe that
juju
kind of,
apple.
Yeah, a juju apple, voodoo apple, sacred apple, holy apple. So
sing it, Jim.
Yeah, I know the lyrics of some of these by now. So again, kind of a splashy, reasonably good. This would have worked on stage pretty well, you know.
Yeah.
As a splashy musical number. You know, we all know she's going to take a bite. And then now we're back in the office again. And now, okay, so we're 34 minutes in. Finally, Alfie's going to reject the contract and leave.
Over a third of the way through
the
movie.
So the first plot point is coming about 15 minutes later than it should in relation to other movies. So we'll take it from there. We'll see what goes on from here. So let's see. Now... you know, there's a quick attempt on BB's part to get Alfie back on board, but basically, you know, she's going to go to the path of rich and fame, and then Alfie's going to, you know, struggle. And if we take in mind, okay, so if this is the first plot point, by my calculations, the second plot point is going to happen at about the hour mark.
Mm-hmm.
So that's about, you know, a little, actually more than the hour mark. So that's another, you know, 25, 30 minutes of almost nothing happening of relevance to the plot.
Right, right.
So now we get Mr. Boogaloo singing a song to a reggae beat about being a master, which there are many moments in the film that just do not seem to pick up on connotation.
Most reggae songs are actually about one man's superiority over another.
Yeah, yeah, and really, like a white guy singing about being a master to a reggae beat is quite knowledgeable about the history of reggae. and
then they get to the scene where he breaks out the whip and starts crack and shake with it.
Yeah, I mean, there are points. There's another song later on where they seem to be completely oblivious to the connotation. Maybe they did know the connotation of the song, but now here we're clearly in her mode of the lead actress's mode of just tell me where I'm supposed to look and where I'm supposed to stand, and she seems awkward in almost every shot in this montage.
Even Shake's front teeth. One is green and one is red.
Yeah, it's all over the place. It's definitely all over the place. So now, okay. Everyone's singing, and she's just trying to figure out where to look and where to stand or where to sit up. And she's working out in a very unflattering workout exercise outfit.
Yeah.
Now, for this shot, this next ballet shot, just so she worked as hard as Natalie Portman did in preparation for Black Swan. And what's great, again, foreground, background, you have, like, real dancers in the foreground sort of blocking her half the time. So you don't notice that she can barely move. And look, she's just, like, constantly looking around. Her eyes just don't know...
Even when her face is turned away, right, you can tell their eyes are looking all over the place.
She doesn't know where to look. Now, okay, so this is 1980 predicting 1994.
Right.
And so predicting fashion. And once this montage is over, we're going to see that it does actually predict a very specific look that does emerge later. And I'll suggest that when her final outfit comes momentarily. But this is yet another song. It serves a function. And now, okay, here she is coming down the escalator. Who knew that top fashion would be the look that the girl in Napoleon Dynamite has? Like,
oh, yeah, yeah.
All hair to the side sticking out like this?
Yeah, the side bob.
Yeah, the side bob. Oh, in the foreground, there's Joe Pittman again. That's his second appearance in the film, the character played by George S. Clinton. And so there we go. Now tell me that's not the girl from Napoleon Dynamite. That in this film is
makeup's top... about the same too.
Yeah, exactly. So now she's going to go.
Yeah, and she's really a beautiful girl, but they make her look like such a freak there.
Yeah,
I mean, she's scary looking.
She looks a lot better in almost everything else she's in.
Yeah,
you know, definitely a lot better in everything else she's in. So they're going to get in their gold tripped up station wagon now.
That's the same one from the Madonna video that Ali G drew.
There we go. And okay, now this is her first big number, thinly veiled critique of American capitalism called Speed. You know, America's addicted to speed. Uh-huh. I'm going to point out momentarily, we're at the 39-minute mark. In about a minute and a half, we're going to see a very brief cameo. So if you're watching along, it's at the 41:40 mark. A woman who is going to, you know, some of you will recognize from soap operas, and others will recognize from at least one feature film that she's in. So that's coming
up. It's going to be Susan Lucci.
It's I wish it were that exciting, but it's you might even recognize her. Do you want me to tell you who she is?
Point her out. I'll see if I can recognize her.
It'll be literally at 41:40, and we've got the countdown here.
Okay.
The other thing.
I mean, I don't watch a lot of soap operas. I doubt I'm going to recognize her.
The other thing Scarlett pointed out is the interesting microphone technique in this particular song. That sometimes it doesn't seem to matter where the microphone is in relation to her mouth. So we've got that going on in this. There she is. Do you recognize her?
I do recognize her.
Yeah.
I don't know who she is, but I totally recognize that face.
So she's from General Hospital, Finola Hughes. She's been in a couple movies, but the one maybe you'd know is the sequel to Saturday Night Fever, Staying Alive, that Stallone directed with. So she's the main protagonist, or main woman in Staying
His dance
Alive.
Dance partner.
The dance partner in Staying Alive, yeah.
I think I've seen her from something else.
Yeah, she's been in a lot of other stuff.
Something not too terribly long ago.
Yeah, she's in a lot of stuff. And then, but unfortunately, that means she's involved in two hideous musicals. Like, you know, because Staying Alive is about, you know.
Well, that's why she made most of her money on a soap opera.
Exactly. But I do feel bad that she got stuck in this, and then, you know, some really horrible.
I wonder how good the money is for the soap opera actors.
In the long run, probably pretty good, but
I mean, it's steady, so that's got to count for
it's
something.
The steady. I think it's the steady, because I think they're pretty cheap to produce.
Yeah. So. It's not like you have real talents involved, so they've got to be pretty easy to do.
Now, we would think that Bebe is one of our key characters, and this would be just the first of many showcase songs for her. But as we'll see, this is sort of
even
her
with the volume down. This song is annoying.
Yeah, this is. There's a couple moments where, as you're watching this, you're just going to have to turn the music down. But this is sort of her showcase moment for many, many minutes, and we're not going to really see much of her singing until another key moment in about in about 20 minutes. So there it is. That's her big splashy moment.
I feel like I was at the carnival there for a minute.
Yeah. Now, I can. I'll keep talking as we get a refresher on the on our drinks. This woman who's being interrogated by the police. I had to look her up because she intrigues me as I have to assume she's one of the key carryovers from the Hebrew stage musical, because she's clearly sort of the Jewish mother kind of character. In this case, she's the Jewish landlady. And once she starts interacting with Alfie, it's clear that she's trying to play like the older Jewish mother type character, right?
Yeah.
But like it struck me.
I thought she was his mother at first.
See,
and
there's one moment where it's so freaky because if you still think she's his mother, like he does something so weird in the scene that you're like, oh, I must have misunderstood.
What happened here last night? A pogrom?
Yeah, it's like, you know, the direct Jewish references, you know, like that. And it's just the tackiness of that
is
a line, too.
The
fiddler
on the roof moment.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, thank you for this is yet another musical reference that sort of tradition. But anyway, she has to be not playing anywhere close to her age. So I actually had to look up. This is why I was trying to figure out how old he is in relation to how old she is.
Uh-huh.
Want to take a guess? Like, what do you think she's trying to? She's trying to play like in her 50s.
Yeah, I would say 50s. Yeah,
she's 39 when this is made.
Well, I gotta say, 39 is pretty fucking old.
Yeah. And, you know, to get back to your sort of spray paint commentary before, like, they just have this little wisp of gray in her hair that's done very, you know, and it seems like, I bet she's been playing this character since, like, high school, High School Musicals, like, where she would play the older mother matron, even though she's not that age yet.
Yeah, it's kind of like in the sitcoms of the 70s.
Yeah, that's true, too.
That's about the level of makeup effect they would do for someone.
Now, here we go. Foreground, background staging, and then we're going to get the weird moment. Is he? I hope he's not her child.
At that point, I was pretty much guessing that she wasn't the mom.
Right, right.
Or
so,
praying.
So he feels up the Jewish matron landlord.
I do that with my landlord sometimes, and her husband hates it.
Yeah, yeah. It's it doesn't play well.
No. Yet I still haven't had a rent increase.
There we go. That's
that's because she likes it. He hates it. She likes it.
Right, right. So now here's going to be yet another song that doesn't really move the plot forward, other than this is a sample of what he's trying to sell, and it's going to be unsuccessful. When he plays it, finally plays the end of it.
So that makes me uncomfortable, because I've had people just sit in front of me and play a song for me before, and it's a very uncomfortable experience.
Right, right.
Talk about like not knowing where to look.
Right. So luckily, we're going to get a montage of him walking to the studio to try to sell the song rather than stay. Now notice those two baby carts. Okay, so they must have spent some money on those triangular baby carts.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to see, I'm curious to see if they have the exact same labels on them, but we're going to see them again in this montage, which leads me to that other point about the tripped out station wagons.
Mm-hmm.
There's two gold station wagons that we're going to see that belong to Bim. And then there's a lot of cars that they clearly spent some money on to trip out. And there's going to be one shot where you see about six of them, but you never see them again. Like, why do they spend that much money on stuff you're never going to see?
Right.
Now we see the same. It's different. I think it's a different couple of women, but there are the baby carts again. I think they just put different labels on them.
But also, one of the baby carts before had two bubbles.
Right, okay, there we go.
It had two smaller bubbles.
Right, they just made
some...
So
at least one of those is a different one.
Yeah, that could be. Or minor changes. But near the end of the film, we're going to see a vehicle with bubbles on it that it's clear they just gave up. Like, let's not spend that much more money on the vehicles. That we're not using. Yeah, I'll point out. It's kind of sad they just half-heartedly attempt to put bubbles on the top of the car.
You know, don't put bubbles on if you're not going to try.
Yeah, and it's like you got to go all in. Like, if it's either all... Yeah, all the vehicles have
bubble
to be done the same
way. Bubble it the fuck up.
Yeah. So now...
I like the fact, too, that it's not like the idea of... It's not like he in particular is bad. It's just that ballads have been wiped from the face of the earth in 94.
Right.
Like,
right.
Ballads are no longer acceptable. Even though they've been around for the last 2,000 years.
Right.
Now, like,
right.
Something stank them up.
Right. It sort of anticipates the rise of grunge, don't you think? That there needed
Hell,
to be
even
some.
Even grunge has ballads.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. So it had to have some breakthrough come through in 1994. Mm-hmm. So. Now, he's going to get busted in the park for not playing or not wearing his BIM ID. And
the park.
I'm going to look ahead here and think, what else was I going to say about, I knew I had some comments just for the lulls in the music numbers and just the general lulls of, this is a relatively slow scene. The director and producer... Oh, actually, here we are. This is the horrible, horrible, really long, nothing happening musical sequence, the reprise of Bim's All the Way. Now, what's funny is, okay, I have to admit
Stop putting out the fire.
That is funny. Okay, that I do have to give them credit for the audacity of that joke. But now, okay, we're not going to follow BB, or barely going to follow BB. Here's some more tripped out cars. Stopping surgery.
I guess that's sort of.
Oh, now there's Guantanamo Boys. They all work at the Coke factory. So
the evil corporation's taking over.
Yeah, everyone who was in Orange before, they're now working at the Coke factory.
That car's really souped up. Super thin.
Yeah. So considering the screen time for those cars, that was a lot of effort put into tripping those up. There's the Coke factory in the background with all the Guantanamo Boys.
That just reminded me of like an old Japanese like giant monster show. Or something.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
So all the Guantanamo Boys are making Coke.
Hey, he came out of his anesthesia long enough to... Oh, no, he didn't.
No. Yeah. And then, of course, we've got the little joke with the nuns. So of course, they got to go into dance for half a second and then go back into repose. And yeah, there we go. And I don't think there's any lyrical content other than "Hey, hey, hey, Bims all the way," because I'm noticing the subtitles are done, so they don't need to introduce anything more.
Thank God. I mean, if they just kept putting that subtitle up over and over and over again.
Yeah. And this was another point where Scott was like, "Can you just turn this down for a while? Because this is," and we've got a couple more, at least another minute of this.
What are those hair dryers?
Hair dryers, like funky hair dryers. Yeah.
That's what caused that house fire, was those hair dryers. Those things look dangerous.
You got to admit, though, location, like some of these locations are great. You know, they look these funky buildings in Berlin. But and of course, the monorail, the convenient use of the monorail. But,
yeah. That Berlin, that's a funky town.
Yeah, yeah.
Even in 1980.
In 1980, good place to be. But even if you liked the song the first time around, I have to think you'd be pretty tired of Bims All the Way.
It's like the Smash Mouth version of Why Can't We Be Friends, where they just go into Why Can't We Be Friends over and over for like 2 minutes.
Right. Okay, so there we see Bim and BB hitting the high note at the end.
She sang one note in that song.
Yeah. And now he happened to be walking home, so he's going to see BB and the mob around her, and he's going to try to contact her, but... You know, I don't really consider this, you know, plot. You know, this is, he happened upon her. So it's not like he went out and sought her to try to contact her.
Right place, right time.
So he hasn't really made a decision to change anything about his destiny yet. So we still haven't reached another plot point or any sort of significant movement in the plot.
I mean, he did go to the recording studio to try and sell the song.
Right, right.
He did something.
So that's in sync with his first decision, which is I'm going to strike out on my own and try to make it on my own. And, you know, to heck with her kind of thing. Or to heck with Bim.
Right.
So now we've got the jealous other singers. And we've got the tripped up bubble station wagon, gold station wagon. More spray hair, and more glad bag costumes.
My mom actually used to, I was just thinking about this the other day. I don't know why, but we would go to Astroworld. I remember it happening when we went to Astroworld one time. She would put garbage bags on us if it was raining.
Right.
Instead of buying us like a rain jacket or whatever, a slicker.
Right.
She would put garbage bags. I remember walking around Astroworld in a fucking garbage bag. Hi, we're the poor folk. Don't mind us.
Right. Oh, I know what I was going to start talking about the director, who Menachem Golan, who's best known for his collaborations. You know, I think this is his first film as a director, but he produced quite a number of films. Best known for creating the Canon Group,
Is a Canon film.
Yeah, this is a Canon film. And Canon is most famous for, among other things, making Chuck Norris a star.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the Chuck Norris films are...
Kick for good measure.
Yeah, but he was very much a deal maker. So, like, he would, you know, try to make films based on deals that he would make at the Cannes Film Festival. So one of the most famous deals in film history that I'll just try to fit this story in while we're waiting for nothing to happen... He negotiated with the French director Jean-Luc Godard and the American writer Norman Mailer to collaborate on an adaptation of King Lear. And this was agreed upon on a napkin contract at the Cannes Film Festival. And the deal would be it would be finished by the next Cannes Film Festival. And it was completed. It's got an amazing cast. It's worth looking for. It's not all that great unless you like Godard, but it stars Molly Ringwald.
You mean Goddard?
Yeah, yeah. It stars Molly Ringwald, Burgess Meredith, Woody Allen makes an appearance in it, and
because why wouldn't he?
Yeah, and it's all this sort of deal making stuff that's typical of sort of 80s filmmaking. Now we're getting into an emotional moment of the film where. This is the most obvious sort of, Grease ripoff song, I think.
Yeah.
Like, Hey Alfie is just like Sandy and or it's also like Hopelessly Devoted to You as you get the singing out the window, right?
To tell you the truth, I don't think it was until this point in the movie that I really was 100% sure that they were ever a couple.
Right, right.
Because they're very non-sexual. There's no romance or spark between them. They could have just been, they could have been brother and sister.
Right.
I had no idea early on.
Right, no real
like,
character development.
I actually made a note, like, is that his girlfriend?
Right. So now I think...
Look at that acting.
God. Now, what's great about this is... Now, he's been beat up, and he's got a, you know, she's singing for now, but you know it's eventually going to be a duet from a distance. Like, the convention of, she's looking out the window. Now, he...
In the rain.
By the end of the song, he's got to get to a window so he can sing to her.
Yeah.
So this is the tension of the film. Can he get to that window to, like, look
he's,
out
he's
into
in
the rain?
He's in the street. He's got to get inside.
Right. And this is so much like Hopelessly Devoted to You, or, in his case, it's like Sandy from Greece, you know? So it's sort of a combination of those two songs.
I don't remember how Sandy goes. Sing it for me.
Sandy is in the when she leaves him in the drive-in theater.
Yeah, I didn't ask that.
Sandy, baby, oh why? Whatever.
I just want to see if
I can get you
to sing.
You can get me to sing it. Okay, so now he's belting it out, and now he's both bleeding and suffering, and
But at least he reached the area where it was raining.
Right, now he's in the rain. Now what's funny is. Acting-wise, this is difficult because you've got to convey that you can barely walk, yet you can belt it out.
Yeah,
which is great when he gets to the stairs. Now this is he's got to get back to his apartment, you know, and how much energy is he going to use to convey? And this is great up the stairs, like he's belting it
as he's crawling up the stairs.
He can barely stand up, yet he's belting the key emotional part of the song. So. And then it's sort of also like the end of Summer Lovin' in because you're going to cross cut between the two, and they don't realize that they're both singing the song.
That they're both singing the same fucking song.
Yeah, yeah. So, and then this is funny. Okay, this is great foreground background stuff. We know he's got to get to the window. It's going to take him another few seconds.
Why does he have a picture of a naked man on his wall?
Yeah, yeah. The wall is odd. Like, all he has to do, really, is get to the window, but he stops for a drink. They've got to fill up this part of the music and until it gets to the point where he has to belt out this music, belt out this chorus. Now, okay, now he's there, now belt it out. Like, they had to give him business, like, take a drink, take your jacket off, to fill the measures of the song until he could get to the window.
I wonder if they had to go back for reshoots on that.
Right. He's like, okay, we've got...
It's like they just had this like extra 15-second gap, and they're like, what are we... right, we'll get him back in here. Yeah. He's not working.
Yeah, yeah. So now we've got... Now we zoomed into him, and now, of course, where do we go from here? I guess we're going to have to zoom out for emotional impact. So now we're slowly zooming out on her, and we're going to zoom out on him. Ideally, you'd think you'd want sort of balanced compositions, but we're sort of already too far away from him. You know,
your brain just must rattle on like a mile a minute anytime you watch a movie. Like, I just sit there and I watch. I'm like, this is cool. And every so often something will occur to me. But just you die. You have got every detail. I mean, you're dead on. It's just, it must be work for you to watch a movie.
Well,
that's what I wrote in the blog today. I was like, I'm not a film professor. I'm a film geek. And now that I'm sitting with Jim watching a movie, I'm so like, dead on.
If I didn't think I was going to talk about it, I wouldn't do this.
You don't? Really?
Oh, no. I can turn this off. I knew I was concerned, like, you know, 90 minutes of talking, like, I got to have something to say. So.
Right. No. I mean, I knew this would be the case. You're obviously much more prepared than I am. I'm like, I better drink more so I have something funny to say.
And actually, I'd say a lot of my prepared remarks are sort of done by now. So we're almost at the hour mark, which means we've got about a half hour left. And really, I think you'd agree, if we agree that his leaving Bim was the first plot point, nothing has really happened of consequence in terms of plot.
No, I mean, all they've done is, like, filled up the time showing us, like, yes, she's an instant star.
Right.
Or like, we do a montage where it's like, oh, we're gussying her up for stardom.
Right, but even that's not, like, her doing stuff. It's, like, things happening to her. And then for him, you know, things happen to him, but he's not... Oh, but here, we're going to come up on a key line here. Because she's finally going to tell him to do something. And I think that's going to cue, finally, the final act.
Rent.
Yeah, pay the rent. But he's also, she says,
job,
get
man.
Off your ass and go to her.
Here's an orange jumpsuit. Go work at the Coke factory.
Yeah, so here she comes. So get your ass out of bed and go find her. Right there. Okay, finally.
Because it went so well the last time you ran across her.
Yeah, yeah. Which leads to, and you think, okay, this might be complicated for her to, you know, for him to find her or get access. No, he just walks in. He's just going to walk in on this party. And this party, I think, even more so than the early one, references Rocky Horror Picture Show. This is more sort of overt sort of gay subculture, transvestite stuff. And even to a degree references, what's the... Touch Me, that song, you know.
Touch Me, that's the name of it.
When we get to one of the great innuendos and double entendres of the whole film, the next song, which is, I have to think they understood what they were doing, but we'll see when we get to it.
Well, he's in a damn brothel. I mean,
Well, her next... Now I'm forgetting...
See, this is where Lilith takes over. Lilith, whatever her real name is.
Mandy and Pandy? Is that what it is? Pandy?
I didn't realize that she was the other half of Mandy and Pandy.
Yeah, yeah.
She's just always been Lilith to me.
Now, there's that French reporter again. So this is his
third appearance. Got a job now as the bartender.
Yes, yes. And now we're going to see the other reporter come in.
That's what actually happens when you lose your job as a reporter. Yeah, yeah. You take a job as a bartender. I used to work for the Times.
So there's Joe Pittman. Now, this is weird. He says, Joe Pittman from the Daily Post, what's he doing here? But how does he know? He wasn't in that other scene.
Because Joe Pittman, everybody knows the name Joe Pittman. Everybody reads the papers.
Yeah, that's true. I stand corrected.
He's the Ben Still of 1994.
Yeah, yeah, I stand corrected. Of course, about Ben Stillman. The future.
I also used to know, since I'm throwing names around tonight. That's right. I used to know Ben pretty well. Yeah. I believe he wrote an article about me once.
Ah, well, there we go. So, okay. So, this is, of course, leading to, you know, them drugging our hero. He should never have drank that green drink.
No, never drink.
Because now he's already sort of semi-hallucinating. And we get the one horn. And again, I think there's a specific... iconographic
you didn't
reference there.
It?
No, I did. I'll have to look it up between now and the time we post this. But
I've never heard of anything along
like
those
a one
lines.
Horn, a one horned devil. I think it's a reference to something, but I'd have to look it up.
One arm bandit.
Yeah, the one arm bandit. Yeah, that could. That's a possibility. So they've drugged him. So now, so her name's Pandy.
Pandy.
Yeah. And now Pandy is actually going to have two key songs coming up here, and this is going to be your first one.
That girl's got big boobs.
And when you think about it, by the time the film's over, in a
that
way...
That guy's got big boobs.
She has better songs than BB does.
Oh, yeah, he keeps drinking the drink even after he starts hallucinating.
Yeah.
He's like, hey, clear my head with some more of this.
Because if you're...
Marilyn Manson.
If you're feeling drugged, finish the drink. I think that's just in case. So
it's like antibiotics. You want to do a half dose. You got to do the whole prescription.
Right. Now Pandy's going to lead him off, and this is going to raise an interesting question in terms of storytelling. Now he's hallucinating, and we're seeing his point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Now the question will be, in the middle of the song, there's going to be some funky stuff going on. And I'm wondering, and we can debate this as the song goes on, is it going on we can fight. Is it going on in his head, or is it going on in her head?
Her who? Pandy?
Pandy. Yeah, when we get to the bed scene here. Okay, now she's going to sing the innuendo, I'm coming for you. The name of the song is I'm Coming for You. And so as they writhe around on the bed momentarily, coming for you.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, there's...
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's spot on.
Yeah. So
hold you and squeeze you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Every inch of your love, and so as they
both of them
momentarily going to be writhing around on a bed. Thinly veiled double entendre in terms of coming for you.
See, this just goes more into the Lilith thing too, though, because I think Lilith is like a temptress as well.
That could be.
I guess in my mind, Lilith is a little bit of everything. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, she ends up then being a much more interesting character because she's got this fantastic song, and this is unlike BB. BB hasn't really at the window song she's singing from the heart, but Pandy's going to have this song, which is sort of, she's singing from her own character, and she's going to sing from her own character again, which means I think she's got better songs than BB does.
Now, do you think that Pandy really, like, wants him to be her man, or does she want to replace her old musical partner because he's a has-been, or is she just working for Mr. Boogaloo and doing what Mr. Boogaloo wants?
All three are really interesting possibilities, none of which are developed.
Yeah.
Because
I just remember the first time I was watching this, having this sense, like, she really does want him. Like, she wants...
Right.
She's got a thing for him.
That's indicated, you know, by glances from the very first scene, yes. So now she's writhing on him in...
She's got a nice butt.
Yeah, in a very tight pink...
See, this is my idea of a commentary track. Look at them boobs. Yeah. She got a nice butt.
Well, we got plenty to comment on momentarily as we go into this more abstract sequence. And now, okay, so...
Yeah, she's straddling him singing, "I'm coming." Yeah, coming just for you.
Yeah. So now, okay. The curtains rise, and in this abstract space, which isn't really there, we get a series of beds... with apparently gay men having heterosex with women. I think
they'd have to be gay because they're doing it all wrong. That chick was just on that guy's back.
Yeah, so we're going to, you know, I was going to try
now she's humping him from behind.
I was going to consult the Kama Sutras to see all these positions that they're going to try.
Bad positions.
Yeah.
There's another chick on a guy's back.
Right. So we're going to get all this sort of humping and innuendo kind of, not more than innuendo, it's like various sexual positions on the bed.
Right.
But now here, okay. Now, is this in his head or in her head? Or is it in no one's head? Because if he has this African-American woman on top of her, what does it mean for him to fantasize about all these white couples having sex? Or vice versa.
Oh, it feels good, but I wish she was a white chick.
Or if it's in her head, because she's singing the song, like, what does it mean to have, you know... Like,
I would think that the idea would have to be that it's in his head, because it's his hallucination, which is why we still have the fuzzy images
on the screen. No, I'm buying that, but at the same time, it's like, yeah, it's...
I think it's all in the director's fucking head, Gulag Archipelago, or whatever
or,
he said
or
his name
is
once.
Or is it in no one's... Now we're getting some mixed couples in the background, too, so there's a mixed couple, and then... one black couple.
Yeah, because like halfway through the scene, they went, "Holy shit! All those couples are white. Yeah. We gotta get some color in there."
Even then, most of them were in the background, and
that guy had a mustache.
That's
practically black.
Yeah,
white guy with a big bushy mustache, beard. That's almost ethnic.
Yeah, so it's still interesting. Then it's sort of like the scene in Ghost that people complained about. That, you know. Where Whoopi, literally it would be Whoopi Goldberg touching Patrick Swayze, right? Yet they chose to replace Patrick Swayze's body in that scene. You know what I'm saying?
Not really. I saw Ghost once, like 20 some odd years ago.
So anyway, she was writhing around, and we'll just assume that was in his head then.
See, I think he did it because all men know that once you ejaculate, it totally clears your head. Right. Yeah, if you're ever drunk and you get pulled over by a cop, just fuck a chick really quick.
Yeah,
and you'll lose your buzz.
There we go. Because now, you know, he can work his way through the apartment, through the complex, and you know he tries every door and
doesn't try him very well.
No,
he's turning any knobs. He's just pounding on them.
No, and we get more of your red and green motif that you were talking about before. And then, you know, he finally does enter a room. I have to think there's an easier way to enter the room that he finally enters. But let's see how this plays itself out as he gets more sort of transvestite, trans...
What do you mean an easier way to enter the room?
There, he breaks through the damn door. <He's>
like, I thought you meant like where he was just now. I'm like, he walked in.
Yeah, breaking into the green room. Like, I mean, in that case, he didn't even try the handle. Like, he just broke, and there's glass everywhere, and, you know... and then BB, apparently in her own drug state, is with fake Roger Daltrey, he's heartbroken.
Robert Daltrey.
Yeah. Now, this is one of the weird
Actually, he looks
transitions.
Like the crazy guy from Lost Boys right there.
And when Scarlett was watching this...
And then there's Gandalf.
Yeah, she walks back in and she's like, "Did I miss something?" I was like, "No, this is just as weird of a transition." You're right, Gandalf the Grey is for some reason out in the park and somehow... Our hero.
Few people know that this is the first movie Peter Jackson worked on.
Yeah. So now we've got this new character. Now, it took me a while to realize who this actor was and that he plays a double role. Do you realize that? The Gandalf character here?
So he's already been in this movie?
No, he's going to be another character later. So I don't want to give anything away.
I think I know what character you're talking about. Yeah.
So, and this is great. So, you know, what is this? These are leftovers from the 60s known as hippies. So now, if you were in your 20s in 1994, which I, you know, I knew what hippies were without being explained to me. But
how
then,
was I in 94? I was
24.
I was 26.
Yeah. But that doesn't explain the young people who are, the young people aren't leftovers from, unless they're the children of the peaceniks here.
Oh, man, he skipped that baby when he passed that joint.
So now BB's having second thoughts. Oh, here's our third package of this
Shake's
is
package.
Shake's package is quite.
And just to emphasize even more, we're going to put it in a white cod piece on a black
right,
dude.
Right, right. And that's, you know, that takes guts to just, you know, imagine seeing that on the big screen, you know, that's. And then his fantastic, amazing stories back of his kimono there.
Did you ever tell about the soundtracks being thrown?
No, I didn't. So this is a good interval. Apparently at the premiere of the film, and I'll cite all my sources for this when you look at the blog.
Like people are going to go like, that fucking like, Jimbo was lying. That never happened.
Or know that I, you know, it's not like I'm making this stuff up whole cloth. And I, you know, I want to give credit to the people who actually have looked into this. At the premiere, one of the premieres, they gave out free soundtracks, copies of the soundtrack. And by the end of the film, apparently or allegedly, people were throwing the soundtracks back at the screen. Now, here's our bubbles. Here's our bubble vehicles where I have to think at this point in the movie, they just gave up. They just, let's take a van and just stick some pink bubbles on top of this and let's just call it a day. These police fans, I have to think they're not nearly as futuristic as, you know, the other ones. Look at that. They didn't even try on these police car, vans.
They're boobs. Yeah. So here's just some of my random drunken things I wrote down, since we seem to have a second. I wrote about the pogrom and about Lilith. Pogrom?
I can never get it right.
I remember when she said it, like, I'd always read that word, but I'd never heard anyone say it. And go like, oh, that's how you say it.
Right.
So he feels her up, and that's okay.
Right.
So I was talking about the momish character.
Right.
Who does Mr. Boogaboo remind me of? Which I guess we've clarified that now.
Right.
That guy had tits.
which
I said out loud when it happened just now. I didn't realize this was on here.
Right.
Because I was like, that chick had big tits. And I went, that guy had big tits. An homage to porn.
Right.
Leader of the hippies today would be played by Billy Connolly.
Yeah, that's good. Right, mm-hmm. Right.
And introduction of space age banana hammocks.
There we go, which is Shake's.
I guess this would have to be with Lilith's next song coming up, because I wrote Lilith's song made my sphincter cringe.
Oh, wow.
I don't know what the next song is.
Well, hold on, because
stop there.
Because that catches us.
Really,
up
the
on
Billy
this.
Connolly thing was what caught my eye. Because I'm like, that's probably right.
Before, let me just say one last thing about the soundtrack. I will post a link to someone who's uploaded an MP3 of the entire soundtrack.
Oh, really?
So if people want to revisit the soundtrack, they're more than happy to.
Maybe I'll take a clip off of it and I'll do that for the audio round at trivia. Just be like, "Yeah, you listen to Gemini's podcast,
you
get an
know
advantage."
What this is from. Right. So now here's what I'm wondering again in terms of just design of a film and stars and so forth. Here's the shot I was talking. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Seven
is
and a half.
Is that including the motorcycles?
The motorcycle, and then 7, 8, 9, 10. 10 vehicles pass through this one shot that's sort of. And
it's
they
like
have
a
to 10
second shot that means nothing.
Yeah, and they pimp out like all those vehicles just for that shot of her leaving the building, which is interesting.
So is that her, like, this is her rebellion now? She's
right,
leaving.
Now
she's
going to
get away from
and now
them.
Here's what's interesting. Like, you would think this would be BB's song, but it's Pandy singing. Now, this could be because the lead actress had someone else singing for her, and I had the name written down somewhere, but it doesn't really matter.
Of the person singing for her?
Yeah, the person singing for her. Whereas Pandy, like, this is like two showcase songs in a row for her, mm-hmm. and we haven't heard BB sing in quite a while. Yeah. So it's interesting, and you would think this would be her song, BB's song, like I'm going back to him kind of song.
Yeah.
But we have Pandy sing it for the first half of the song. Now, of course, the logic is by the end of the song, BB's got to pick up the end of the song because it's really supposed to be like her song about her going back to try to find Randy. Is it Randy? I've been talking for an hour and a half about
Alfie.
It. Alfie. So now, oh yeah, just go down under the bridge and you'll find him.
With them old hippie bums.
Yeah. Okay, now it's a duet. But really, it's pretty amazing that this minor character has these two showcase moments.
Well, you know, you could also look at it the fact that she got to fuck the man that she secretly loves.
Right,
and it's
right.
opened her eyes and she doesn't want to be part of the evil corporation anymore. She wants to be free as well.
Right, right. Or at least, and she wants to help BB get back to her man.
Yeah.
Scarlett pointed out that her suitcase here anticipates TSA security, like the see-through.
I think I wrote something about her suitcase as well. I remember noticing the hell out of it.
So now here's another
Why would you ever have a clear Lucite suitcase?
Other than anticipating, you know, current security concerns. And again, foreground, background trickery. She passes by Gandalf and doesn't see him. And so we see him.
Mm.
And then, you know, basic staging trick. But and now, when you think about it, okay, like what has to happen for this movie to end? you start thinking about this because we've got about 10 minutes left.
Mm-hmm.
And usually at the second plot point, it would be, okay, now what does the protagonist have to do to achieve his goal,
mm-hmm.
his or her goal? Really, all he wants to do is get back with her, right? But she comes to him. He unsuccessfully finds, you know, he finds her, but he's horrified by what he sees. She sort of happenstance, you know, comes across him under the bridge. And really, when you think about it, what else is there for this film to do once they get back together? You would think this would be the ending, but the last 10 minutes have a pretty amazing...
Well, this is where I wrote, of course, they have their own underground society,
right.
like the Eloy or Ewok,
right.
however you
Ewoks,
pronounce
right.
it. Yeah. From the Time Machine.
Right, right.
L-Y?
Oh, those guys. Okay, yeah. I thought you were saying Ewoks. I was like,
no,
I guess it's like the Ewoks in a way, but
No.
The
Eloy or
yeah,
whatever
yeah.
they were called in,
right.
in the Time
but
Machine.
It's actually closer to the underground society in, like, Matrix 2, you know, because they're all
hippies.
Yeah. So,
but now, wait, real quick, did I miss a plot point? Did something happen that made her go, this is bad, I've got to leave?
No, she woke up and she thought she saw him in a dream, and then Pandy said, no, you did see him, and she said, oh, I got to go. yeah, so right, in terms of plot, it's like, it's not like...
That's how I got back together with my ex-girlfriend.
Yeah,
I just had a dream about her.
I just woke up. Okay, now everyone's going to sing Child of Love, and we're going to have an amazing leap here when you think about it. Which will lead to, you know, hold on to your seats because this, the last 10 minutes go in some pretty weird directions. Considering all the setup, and again, sort of traditional storytelling.
But the movie wants
structure.
To save all of society.
Right,
you know, they
right.
don't want to just get these two crazy kids back together and then go live with the hippies in the dirt under the bridge.
Right. Well, you would think, but in terms of the logic of the film, it's like, oh, they would be happier. You know, without the big corporation. Okay,
nobody
so now,
wants to be one of these dirty hippies.
Okay, so now we cut to outside, and we think, oh, it's the same song, so it's just a little bit later maybe. But look, we now have, in a shot coming up here, if you didn't see him already, our protagonist now has a Jesus beard and a nearly one-year-old son.
Yeah, that took me off guard. I was like, wait,
yeah.
okay,
there
wait,
is.
No, it's like...
right.
much later, okay.
And now it's like Godspell all of a sudden,
musical.
Yeah. So, but now here come the bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
and
we ain't gonna let them hippies live in our park.
Right, right. But really, plot-wise, like, what is there left to resolve, or what is it that the main protagonists have to do or want to do?
I like how they're hitting their shields like they're scaring away animals.
Yeah, yeah, like they're shaking, you know, in a what kind of hunt do they do that? Well, lots of different types of pheasant hunt.
Yeah. Rouse the grouse.
Exactly. So, yeah, be prepared for quite the twist here. And we're going to see, just as a clue, we're going to see the double for the Gandalf character.
Yeah. Okay. I wrote, here, let me take that sticker off your head.
Yeah.
And then I wrote, how long did this production take that he could grow that beard? Yeah. Because he didn't have the beard right. The whole time they were filming. Unless right. They, like, right.
It's,
know,
it could be a, it, it's a pretty effective beard, but...
And then I wrote, they call me Mr. Tubbs.
Oh, that's going to be, yeah. That's
is that a line in the movie?
It's coming up. Yeah. Or Mr. Tops.
I was thinking of it because they call me Mr. Tibbs.
That's exactly what I thought. Yeah, when you get to it, it's if you know the film, they call me Mr. Tibbs, which is the sequel to In the Heat of the Night.
Right. Great line.
So we'll get there momentarily. But for now, we've got our new Jesus figure with the new beard.
And new
being
baby.
Very Godspellish.
That kid is more than a year old.
Yeah. So, BB has replaced her bim mark with sort of some kind of flower on her head. And, okay, so it's a standoff here. Good versus
literally,
evil.
Literally, because all they're doing is standing there.
Right, and then you'll realize how fake Gandalf's nose is in a moment, because you're going to see the actor.
Oh, man.
We're going to see that same actor in another role without the nose. There's our good fanged gentleman there. And so now, it's either she comes back with us. There's Joe Pittman again. She either comes back with us, or you're all under arrest. And, of course, they choose mass arrest.
Yeah.
Yeah, they choose mass arrest. So, and they're going to walk
that's
off.
That's how close-knit their little
there's
commune
gonna be,
is.
We've hinted at this character, and it took me... You know,
we'll let our children be separated from us and live in state health care because we want to defend this one hippie chick.
So now, here's going to be a line. What's going to happen to us, Alfie? I know it's going to be all right. I know he's going to come. Who's going to come? And Mr. Tops. We're 6 minutes away from the end of the film. We've never heard any reference to Mr. Tops at this point.
No,
so, and so even BB's like, who's Mr. Tops? I know he's coming.
Yeah, we've been living in the woods for 3 years together raising this kid. You never mentioned him before.
Trust us. You don't have to go back and listen for references to Mr. Tops. There is no reference
There's
to Mr.
None.
Tops. Now here comes Mr. Tops.
Golden fucking Cadillac.
Gold caddy. Not tripped out with the bubbles, just old school caddy.
Yeah.
But gold, or appeared as like gold coming from the sky. And, of course, everyone is in awe. And this is exactly what Alfie thought would happen. And now, so...
And he turns into the Green Lantern.
Yeah, green. brightest day, darkest night.
Yeah.
So he walks with a little bit of a limp, maybe, which is to be expected.
I like how he, like, gets out, turns right. into a green light, walks for a little bit, turns
right.
into a green light.
Right. And then
appears on the ground.
Why couldn't he just appear on the ground? Like, why drive, walk, and then appear?
Yeah.
Why couldn't he just appear on the ground? So now he's Mr. Tops, and if you don't recognize him, it's the same actor as the Gandalf character.
Yeah.
Who is, now, do we talk about him at all, the character, or the actor?
The actor, no.
Yeah. Joss Ackland, who you're going to recognize most from Lethal Weapon 2. He's the South African who gets shot in the head.
Oh, yeah.
You know, diplomatic immunity revoked, and he gets shot in the head by Danny Glover at the end. He's the main bad guy. And when you see him close up...
It seems to me, in my mind, he looked younger in Lethal Weapon than he did here, and this was like 10 years earlier.
Yeah. So now, Mr. Tops is going to take off with all of the hippies. And, you know, is this really what the hippies want? Do they really want the rapture to happen? Isn't this basically what's happening here?
Yeah, I mean, it is the rapture. That was the last note that I wrote was about, you know, this being the true rapture or whatever.
So, you know, in high school...
I mean, were the hippies Christians all along?
Yeah,
did they have their own little church? I didn't see a single cross amongst them.
Yes.
Most hippies I know aren't very... I mean, they're nice people, but they're not...
Yes.
Christian oriented.
And you know, there and there go our protagonists. And is that really what they wanted? They wanted to be.
They're
like,
all going to have to walk.
Off. Yeah, they got. Yeah, they got to walk. They can't just appear in heaven or.
Yeah.
Who knew the rapture involved so much walking?
The Trail of Tears.
Yeah. So, but what was I going to say about the rapture? There was something else I was going to say about. I lost my train of thought. It will come back to me in the waning moments
of the
film.
Guy?
Oh, no, I know what it was. It was that, you know, in high school, you learn about plays that have, or stories that have the term that I could never pronounce, but Deus ex machina, like God in the Machine.
Yeah.
This is literally God in the Machine. This is the clearest example of a film where the plot's moving along, and then there's literally at the very end...
Yeah,
God, who's not played.
God shows up in a vehicle.
In a vehicle and intervenes and solves the problem.
And he doesn't know where he's taking him. The guy says, "Where are you taking him?" He's like, "I don't know yet." And he's like, "You mean a new plane?" He's like, "I don't fucking know yet."
Maybe. And now, look at does God really walk that way? Does God walk like John Wayne?
He's got a corn cob up his butt.
Yeah, you'd think God would be able. And again, why is God walking? Like he can appear wherever he wants. And what about BB? She seemed to be like okay at the end. Why can't BB go with them?
Oh, BB didn't go either?
Oh, actually, maybe she did. I'd have to look at it again.
Oh, let's not do that.
Let's not bother. In the show notes, I'll. But here it is. Just when you think, oh, there's got to be something else. No, there it is.
The apple.
And there's the closing credit. And there we've done it. Did that seem to go faster for you than you thought it would, actually, while we're talking?
Well, no, I knew if I was, like, watching it with you and we're talking about it, it would go faster. There's a big difference between something like this. This is social.
Yeah.
This isn't me sitting here alone when I got home from work at 4 a.m. Yeah. Like, all right, let's watch this piece of crap.
Catherine Mary Stewart, George Gilmore, who we can find no information about.
Out of all the websites and information Jim found about this movie in his exhaustive research, can't even find out what year that guy was fucking born.
Yeah.
It's not even on his IMDb page or anything.
Right. Right.
The guy's a fucking... Maybe he really is Jesus.
Yeah.
Maybe Jesus just came down to Earth to film this movie. And
yeah. And maybe then he went up in the...
He went back somewhere. He doesn't know where.
Yeah.
He hopped in his golden Cadillac and he took the fuck off.
Right. Right.
Did he have any on his IMDb? Did he have any other movies
listed?
Or?
Nothing else. That I saw. I could look again, but I don't think
he had a familiar look to him, though. Like, yeah. When I was watching this, I kept thinking, he's been in other stuff.
And
I've
you think with
before.
Those tight jeans and that package, you think he would have been in another movie.
Zipporah Mansano. Yeah. Yeah. That's the name for it. Well, he was. They were all just gay porn.
Yeah. Yeah. So, film shot in West Berlin, and that's just the end of it. Cannon Group. Golan Globus. Good stuff.
Ownership of this movie is protected. So don't try and claim it's yours.
Yeah, and we should point it's not ours.
We're just talking about it.
Maybe you might hear some sound effects in the background as we did this, but
well, yeah, I had people ask me, like, how are you going to be able to do that? How's that legal to do that? And I'm like, we're not including the movie.
Right, right.
We're just going to talk. All we're producing is a tape of us talking or a
And
whatever.
Then there's Leo the Lion, and that's it. So any thoughts as we wrap this up?
No, a good pick for our first one. I don't know how we're gonna find something that fucking bizarre to introduce to the world for the next one, but
well, I guess one thing we could invite people if this works, give us some feedback. Give us feedback on what you thought was difficult about doing it, and then give us some suggestions for ones you'd like us to try that people haven't heard of. I mean, it's fun to do.
Definitely. Like Jim said, I wrote it in the blog today, you know, let us know. I mean, you can be honest with us. We're not going to get our feelings hurt. We know we're trying something new and different, and we're just taking a chance and trying something. So, you know, we'll take negative feedback as well. We're not afraid. I can say www.lulasapub.com for all sorts of interesting stuff, but also our email address is lulasapub92@gmail.com. Send us an email. Let us know what you think. And whatever you do, please make sure and rate us on iTunes.
Yeah, that'll help us. It seems like things are going well on iTunes, but we're still in the longer list of new and notable. I don't know how much longer that'll last if we don't get more ratings.
More notable?
Yeah, more. We got to get more notable.
Just a few more notes about the Apple before we wrap up. First, Jimbo meant to ask whether Pandy got to walk into the rapture, not BB, who of course got to walk first with Alfie. Well, looking at it again, Pandy indeed does get to walk into a better place with the hippies at the end of the film. For more links and info about the apple, including a link to the Netflix page for the film, consult the show notes for this episode at lulasapub.com.
Yeah, I guess we just, you know, wrap up on that. Do you any other last thoughts?
Last call, motherfucker.
There we go. We'll end it there, and we'll see you in about 2 weeks.